And we are live for another Dating Kinky Presents. Tonight it is Dr. Bad Kitty, that is Doctorate of Public Health. Bad Kitty talks COVID-19 and kink. And I am super excited about this, getting some real information. It is important to note that the information about this virus is moving incredibly quickly. And so keep in mind that for all of her amazing brilliance and study and effort on our behalf, there is a lot that we still don't know and nobody really knows about this. However, hopefully Bad Kitty is going to have the opportunity to help us sort out at least the things that we know are currently fiction from the things that we know are fact, or at least have the potential for being fact. So without any further ado, I'm going to turn this over to my good friend Bad Kitty and let her take it away. Thank you, Bad Kitty.
You're very welcome. Glad to be here. So you're all probably wondering, who's this Dr. Bad Kitty and why should I listen to what she's got to say? I've been a kinkster my entire adult life. I've been involved in running of kink and swing clubs, and I throw large events monthly at my home. I'm the co-owner with my spouse of a kink toy and furniture business, kinkthings.com. But more relevant to this pandemic, in my professional life, I have a doctorate of public health, a journey which included training in disease transmission, epidemiology, health behavior, health education, how to slow the spread of disease, increase detection, and how to effectively, in an ethical, theory-informed, and evidence-based way, convince people to change their health-related behaviors. What I'm doing right now, this webinar, it's literally what I was trained to do. In my work life, I'm a research scientist and work regularly with federal, state, and local agencies and research organizations all over the country. I've been at this my entire career. And I'm 45. So some might say I know what I'm talking about. I'm an expert in public health. I know a lot about what's going on, but I don't know everything. I'm just doing what I can to help. So on to what you're really here for. Let's dive into it. How bad is this really? Is it time to panic? Because I know that's what's really on your minds. I'm not going to lie. It's bad. And it's going to get a lot worse. But no, it's not time to panic. That won't help anything. Panicking only makes you and those around you miserable. It doesn't change the circumstances. But it is time to take this very, very seriously. It is estimated that 40 to 70% of the population will get this disease. Most will survive, but millions may not, and many millions more may get critically ill, requiring hospitalization. This is way worse than the flu. And frankly, anyone who tries to get you to believe otherwise, you can pretty much ignore everything else they have to say on the topic. Borders to countries and states are getting shut down. Cities are preparing for 2-week shelter-in-place orders, where people are going to be asked not to leave their homes, period, unless they're considered an emergency worker. This is intended to slow the spread of the disease. Nothing is going to stop it. We're trying to slow it. So take everything you read and hear with a grain of salt, even the authoritative sounding stuff, even the things that I'm saying, because there's a lot of misinformation going around. And even with what we do know about the virus, in most cases, it's based on very preliminary research and investigations. Recommendations about what is and isn't safe now may change in the weeks to come as more information becomes available. Just know that there are large teams of people all over the world working on finding a treatment and vaccine options, working to slow the spread of this disease. There is no government conspiracy. There is no conspiracy anywhere. This is actually a pandemic. This is actually something that is affecting everyone's lives and is going to have a really big impact on a lot of people. And we really need to take it seriously. So next, what's the point of this social distancing thing that you've been hearing about? And that's flattening the curve. You've probably heard flatten the curve a lot lately. The point of social distancing, of literally putting as much space in between you and others as possible and staying at home if you're able to do so, as this graph demonstrates, is to flatten the curve. You may have heard that term used a lot lately, but the idea is if we socially distance, we will slow the spread of the disease, spreading out the cases over a longer period of time. So the number of cases needing healthcare services at any given time never reaches the point of overwhelming the healthcare system's capacity. If it happens quickly and spreads too fast, it overwhelms the healthcare system with too many cases at once, like we're seeing in Italy, where they're having to triage people to help the people most likely to survive, potentially leaving the elderly and the immunocompromised to die. Think of it this way, and look at this graph this way. Pick a random number. If we're going to have 1 million cases and they're spread out over the course of a year versus 1 million cases that happen in the course of a month, the healthcare system won't get overwhelmed if it's spread out over the course of a year. When all of those cases get squished into a much shorter time period, you have that really high peak in the curve that overwhelms the healthcare system. So, taking these measures of social distancing and shutting down schools and shutting down businesses is important. And it's something that really needs to happen. So next, we'll have a little bit of a primer on social distancing and the best hygiene practices in pandemic land. First of all, stay home. Go out as little as possible. Socialize only with others practicing good social distancing. Order things online as much as possible. Shop in stores as infrequently as possible. And when you do, wear gloves if you can, discarding them when you return to your car, or use hand sanitizer when you get to your car. If you can have these things on hand, that's a great way to protect yourself when you're out and about. You can, you know, keep a Ziploc bag in your car or a grocery bag to throw used gloves into after you've been out in a store. Because don't just think about wiping down the handle of the shopping cart. There's so many different things you touch in a store. Before you get back to your car, if you are wearing gloves, you can take them off when you get in the car and keep from contaminating your car. Likewise, if you're able, if you keep some hand sanitizer in your pocket, in your purse, in your car, you know, cup holder, you'll be thinking about using it when you get back into your car to keep that a safer space. You may be wondering how long the virus can survive on surfaces, in stores, on the products you buy, and the packages you order. Now, this is what the current understanding is, but that may change in time. So porous items like cardboard, paper, and fabric, the current understanding is that the virus can last up to 24 hours on that. Hard surfaces, plastics, metals, etc., up to 72 hours. So we're looking at a day and at 3 days. Assume that everything you touch or comes into your home may be contaminated. Sanitize it before touching. Wear gloves or wash your hands before or after opening and discarding the packages, and wipe down what's in your packages. Or the alternative, which can save you a lot of the potentially scarce sanitizing supplies, when you order items online or if you go shopping and bring them home, the things that don't need that you don't need them right away, or that, you know, for example, when you go shopping, your canned goods or things that you don't need right away that don't need to go into the fridge, leave them in an area of your home untouched for the recommended amount of time before touching them, considering the last time it was touched. Outside of packages that were touched more recently than were touched more recently than the contents of packages, depending on how it was shipped. Use your judgment. So depending on how urgent your packages are that you order when they were shipped, you could save a lot of sanitizing hassle by just leaving them alone for an extra day after receipt, which, depending on when they were shipped, may render them safe as far as contamination. For example, if it took 2 days for the package you ordered from Amazon to get to you, and then you leave it alone for another day after it was handed off by the delivery person, you both have the 3 days from the time it was shipped and the interior of the package was touched, and the products that you order were touched, and then a day since it was delivered to you. Any virus potentially shed on anything you receive should be dead under the current guidelines. So by just holding off another day on the, or depending on how long it, you know, if you got overnight shipping, that changes, et cetera. But depending on, you know, if you do that, that can save you a lot of sanitizing hassle if it's not something that you need immediately. So next, hand washing and hand sanitizer. When we say wash your hands, what we really mean is wash your hands like you just finished chopping habanero peppers and need to take out your contact lenses. Like that's 20 to 30 seconds. Scrub them good with soap and water all over. For reals. Sing a song if it helps. There's memes flying all over the internet with lyric suggestions for 20 to 30 second lyrics that you can sing. The difference in cleanliness between a quick soapy rinse and a 30 second hand wash are remarkable. And that long of a wash will kill this virus. So even if you don't have hand sanitizer, you should have some soap. When hand washing isn't feasible, use hand sanitizer if and when available. If you can't get hand sanitizer, but you can get supplies to make your own, you can mix aloe vera gel with rubbing alcohol to make hand sanitizer. Bear in mind that the mixture needs to be 2/3 alcohol. So if you're using, for example, if you have only 77% concentration isopropyl alcohol instead of 99%, you'll need more of it in your hand sanitizer mix. Next is don't touch your face, for real. It's really, really hard, a difficult habit to get out of. I've been watching myself. I've been, you know, isolated at home for days now, but I just see how many times a day I touch my face, and it's a lot. It's just kind of something we do without even thinking about it. And we need to try and get ourselves out of that habit in general so that when we're in an unsafe environment like a store, we won't be tempted to touch our face without thinking about it. Touching your mouth or eyes after touching a contaminated surface, it's a hard habit to break, so start working on it now. And again, for it's a good idea if you can get them to have disinfectant spray and wipes for things like ordered packages and surfaces that may be touched by infected items. There's lots of cleaners that can sanitize surfaces. But it, you know, for things that you order or things that you go and buy and bring home, there's, you know, it may be more convenient to use a sanitizing spray or a disinfecting wipe to wipe things down. Now, the next thing that I wanted to touch on is masks. You've probably been seeing conflicting information about whether they're effective or recommended, and even seen recommendations against using them if you're not sick or if you're caring someone, if you're not caring for someone who is. So what's all that about? There's two things here. Regular surgical masks may not be effective enough at stopping the virus, and the more useful N95 style masks may be enough, but there is likely to be a very high demand for them in healthcare facilities. They need to be more or less rationed so that they're available for the people who most need them, which is the people in our hospitals. For now, unless the disease mutates into an airborne pathogen, which there is no sign of it doing, wearing a mask isn't going to be that useful unless you're in a high-risk situation. If you already have masks, you may want to hold on to them in case you really need them. But if you already have them, even just regular surgical masks, wearing them may not stop the virus, but it may help significantly reduce the chances of casual transmission substantially when you're either out in public or having to interact with people who haven't been practicing social distancing. But again, I'm saying if you already have these masks for other reasons, if you have masks that you use for doing, you know, work in your wood shop or things like that, those things may come in handy at some point in the future. But in general, don't try and buy masks because we really, really do need them for healthcare workers who are fighting this pandemic to keep them safe, because if they get sick, then we're in real trouble. So the next question, you know, with the social distancing is, does that mean we need to spend the next few months alone? Well, realistically, if you can practice good social distancing and hygiene, your risk category remains pretty low. So spending time with other friends who are doing good social distancing and hygiene practices is relatively safe, but we all must evaluate our own personal acceptable levels of risk. There is risk inherent with everything we do. As those in the kink community are well aware, Every time you get in a car or walk across the street, you're risking a life-altering auto wreck. We all make choices in our day-to-day lives about what is an acceptable level of risk to us, especially in our kink lives. And in this time of pandemic, you need to evaluate that for yourself and how it balances with your need for income if you can't work from home. And you should discuss those evaluations with any people you may be spending time with. So ask your friends who you're considering seeing. Have you been in contact in the last few weeks with anyone who had COVID or is in contact with someone who did? Have you in the past few weeks traveled to a COVID hotspot area with community spread? Cases that are not specifically related to travel or someone contact with someone who traveled. Those cases that are of unknown origin, those are community spread. That, you know, means it's New York City, for example, had community spread as of March 5th. And, you know, I have a dear friend who went to three concerts in two or three days over last weekend in New York City. And now, you know, is keeping himself isolated because of the potential that just being there could have potentially, you know, caused resulted in transmission of the disease. It's something that you need to be careful about. The next question is, to what extent are you staying at home and practicing social distancing? Find out whether they're working from home, working a staggered schedule, or other work situation where you can have little or no contact with other people. I have friends that are being required to work in their offices, but they literally have a closed door office so they can practice all of the social distancing they need at the office. But there's, you know, going to be people that are home with their kids or otherwise not going out much at all. So find out from people that you're going to be spending time with what their social distancing has been. And ask your friends what kind of hygiene practices they're taking on a daily basis with things that come into their home. Ask how much they venture out in public and what they do to protect themselves when they're out there and when they return. And there's something that you might want to consider doing to support your friends, your neighbors, and your loved ones who are practicing social distancing, which is share shopping and other tasks among neighbors and friends so fewer trips to the store can be made. Maybe this week you go to the store for you and a couple of friends, and next week the next person takes on going to the store. So fewer trips to the store means fewer potential risks. We already went to the next slide. So what should we do if we can't work from home or socially distance? A lot of people have jobs where they can't work from home or will lose their work during this time of isolation, and they'll need to take alternate, less safe jobs to keep food on the table and a roof over their heads. And that is unfortunate, and it's an unfortunate side effect of this crisis, but it's something that unfortunately is inevitable. So if you have a situation where you can't work from home or socially distance, take as many precautionary measures as you can regarding hygiene. Most importantly, wear gloves and or frequent hand washing or sanitizing, and try to get out of the habit of touching your face. As much as you can, keep physical distance between you and your coworkers, and keep your distance from your healthy, socially distancing friends so as to not risk infecting them. Also, bear in mind that when people, so far, there is some evidence that people can be reinfected with COVID. So getting it once doesn't mean you're never going to get it again. If you lose your job, there are things that you can do to try and look into, or if you not necessarily lose your job, but lose your source of income because your business is shut down temporarily and they're not paying people that aren't working. And you need to keep yourself out of social isolation so that you can bring in income. There are restaurant kitchens which may be doing takeout that may be looking for extra help in their kitchens and with their takeout. There are delivery services that are going to be doing delivery for the takeout restaurants. There are rideshare and food delivery apps that are going to need people. Mail order businesses like Amazon that'll be hiring people. Amazon announced that they're hiring at least 100,000 new people and they're increasing their wages. There are apps to grocery shop for people. And frankly, I see that there's likely to be a gig economy arising for people providing services only to people who are socially distancing, thereby keeping their client base and themselves more safe. So you've got one person who's taking on the risk of going out and doing the shopping, or they may be, coming to do, whether it's massage therapy, or they're coming to do carpentry work on your house or plumbing or what have you. But, you know, it could be things that are literally only they're serving clients that are social distancing. So it reduces the need for those clients to be concerned about what's coming into their house or what the person that they're hiring to do stuff for them is able is doing as far as social distancing is concerned. So if you're finding yourself out of work, trying to think about ways that you can provide services for people in that way may be a way of both keeping your risk lower and keeping those people's risks lower as well. So our next slide is, what should I do if I feel sick? Well, the first thing that you should do is notify your local doctor, hospital, or health department. They'll advise you if you should seek testing and if, when, and where it is available in your area. Some areas already have drive-through testing clinics, many do not. In North Carolina, since many of us may be here in North Carolina, the University of North Carolina just announced that they have developed and had approved a new test for coronavirus that will be immediately being rolled out at UNC hospitals and as well across the state and possibly beyond. So that's really good news, because that will greatly improve our testing capacity and capability. But in some areas, it's not available yet. And so your doctor or hospital or health department will be able to help you with that. And they need to know regardless for the sake of tracking the spread of the disease. The next thing to do is to self-quarantine and engage in self-care at home. People are being advised not to go to a hospital unless they're starting to have respiratory distress. They're trying to keep hospital beds open for the people that desperately need them because they need to be on respirators. And so for most people, this is going to have much more mild symptoms, and they'll be able to take care of themselves at home with the typical medications. It's really just treating the symptoms of what you would normally take for the flu. There's one important exception to that, and that is, you know, you have your antihistamines and your decongestants and your expectorants to help. But people also, when they have the flu, take medications for their fevers and aches and pains. And frequently that comes in the form of NSAIDs like ibuprofen and Aleve. New evidence is showing that ibuprofen and Aleve and other NSAIDs can actually cause problems and cause worsening of respiratory symptoms. And can interfere with the ability to fight off the respiratory spread of the disease. So it is being recommended that if you're showing signs of a fever or if you're showing signs of coronavirus, do not take NSAIDs like ibuprofen or Aleve, and take Tylenol instead. So then the next slide is, how long is this going to last? It really depends on how much we flatten the curve and whether an effective treatment is found and whether and when a vaccine is found. But expect life to be disrupted by this through the summer, possibly longer. What about a vaccine? So there are already the first vaccines being tested, but if they pan out, that's a big if. Because there has to be a lot of human trials that have happened, like literally human trials of a vaccine with it being injected into somebody's arm have been approved and started, because this is that emergent. And that is pretty much unheard of in the world of medicine. But that's already starting. But even they have to do enough trials and tests of the vaccine to make sure that it is safe for people to take and safe for a wide variety of people to take. And then they have to, once that's determined, produce the vaccine. And realistically, we're looking at, if the ones that they've just started testing now are found to be effective, potentially a year and a half or more before they become available to the public. So a vaccine is far off. However, is there any hope on the horizon? Possibly. I've seen several studies in the last few days that have been looking at the use of existing medications to treat coronavirus. and to see if there is any effect on COVID-19. And there have been several trials that have been publishing early results, but are, you know, of course, continuing and currently underway, that have been showing promising results with the drug chloroquine and variations of it, which is an anti-malaria drug that's been around for 50 plus years. It can have some pretty heavy side effects, but the early results that I read about indicated that it may shorten the span of the disease. It may help prevent the disease from becoming respiratorily mm-hmm. dangerous so that people do not require respirators. And it doesn't get into the lungs or stay in the lungs in the same way and cause lung damage. And it may make cells inhospitable to the virus. So if those trials pan out, that's not going to stop the virus. There's still going to be a ton of people that are going to get it. But if it slows the duration of the virus, if it shortens the duration of the virus, if it helps treat the virus, if it helps make fewer people need hospitalization and die, then that could be hope. That could turn the tides. If we're able to, and this is a big if, but if we're able to find an effective treatment like that, then it could be a matter of you drive up to a testing facility, you get tested, you test positive, you're handed a dose of or a packet of medication, and they send you on your way to continue to self-quarantine at home and hope that it takes care of it and you don't need hospitalization or further medical intervention. But that, again, is a big if. There is some hope, but it's still very, very early. And things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. So what about seeing partners and friends and kinksters in these dark times? Assess your own personal level of risk. Discuss theirs with them. It's more safe to see your friends who are practicing careful social distancing and hygiene if you are too, but that is part of your personal level of acceptable risk assessment. Find creative ways to get kinky at home. Use video chats with partners who aren't at home. And the question of, you know, can this be passed through sex? Of course it can, because the likelihood that you can engage in actual sex while maintaining the distance and lack of breath droplets in your partner's breathing area required to avoid the virus is very low. If you're close enough to have sex, you're close enough to exchange the virus. You could potentially minimize that by both showering and or wearing gloves, donning masks, but unless that's your kink, maybe just hold off for a while on the sex with people not already in your personal risk bubble. A lot of people are used to buying their kink toys at kink conventions and stores. And now, you know, most businesses are going to be moving to online, online models in general, but especially in the kink industry. So I can't not plug my spouse and my business, kinkthings.com. He makes artisan but affordable kink toys and furniture with reclaimed and exotic woods and unusual leathers. His office and workshop are on our property, and we're continuing business as usual with careful social distancing and hygiene during the pandemic. He has lots in stock, and if you can dream it, he can make it, so get in touch. With conventions and stores shutting down, he'll be ramping up his online and social media presence during the pandemic, so get in touch and be comforted that the packages coming from Kink Things are coming from a very low contagion risk place and with a very small on-site staff practicing very careful social distancing and hygiene practices. That's kinkthings.com. But on to our last slide, which is managing relationships in the time of social distancing. So check in on your friends and loved ones frequently. Extroverts and introverts alike may need some interaction and support. People are you know, panicking. People are stressed. They're anxious. Reach out to your friends and loved ones, both to check on them and if you're feeling the need for connection. And keep doing that over the months to come. We don't know how long our need for isolation is going to continue, but prepare for this to be a long-term thing because it most likely is. Anxiety is normal at times like this, which is why checking in with each other and making time for each other is important. Keep your current relationships going by making time to spend with each other on a video chat, a phone call, shared movie watching, online game playing, or whatever other ways you can to use electronics to minimize the isolation and the seeming space between you. Keep in touch. Keep a check on your own mental health and that of your loved ones. Don't drown yourself in constant news updates. That's my job. Try to limit yourself to 20 minutes a day if it's stressing you out, because the constant news coverage won't likely change your day other than to make it more stressful. Take care of yourselves and each other. We're all under high stress times right now. Try to be patient and understanding of that in your loved ones. Perhaps come up with a code word, like a safe word, that means something like, I think I'm feeling a little extra anxious or cranky because of all this COVID stuff right now. Or, hey, honey, do you think maybe you're feeling a little anxious or cranky because of this COVID stuff? You know, a code word that you can use to say that without having to string all those words together. My other half, in his half-hearted attempt at humor, suggested, hey, you need a lime with that corona? Which we quickly shortened to our code word, lime. It's an easy way to express what you're feeling without having to put together all the words, and just help your partner understand where you or they seem to be at. Let's all be gracious and understanding of each other's limes, people. Now, I'm sure some of you have questions. I don't claim to have anywhere near all the answers, but I'll do what I can.
Wonderful. Thank you so very much. Oh my goodness. I was shooting little texts to Ryan, like off screen, saying, wow, she's giving us a ton of information. She's really a professional, isn't she?
I actually do this for a living.
So we've got a couple that have come through over your talk here. And one of them from Hi There Catsuit is, hello, Bad Kitty, and thank you for sharing. We keep hearing the self-quarantine for 14 days. For those of us who do, what happens after that? Or do you think the number will just go up?
Frankly, you know, it's hard to say. For now, they're saying 14 days, but I think, frankly, that's probably largely guesswork. It's I'm sure, based on evidence that they have found in China and other places where they've looked at viral loads in people after they've been in quarantine for a certain amount of time. Also where they've looked at, you know, if you've been exposed, they probably figured out that, you know, symptoms or evidence of exposure could show up to 2 weeks later. And that's why they're recommending 2 weeks. After somebody has been infected, it is possible that they remain potentially shedding the virus for several weeks more after that. So that's something to also bear in mind as the, you know, as we get from the, oh God, what if I get it, to the phase of things where we're thinking about, okay, now I know people who've had it, when can I interact with them? So I think right now we have to go with the 2 week recommendation and just know that that may change. And, you know, and if you've been potentially exposed, then you self-quarantine for 2 weeks until you've heard otherwise.
Awesome. So somebody had asked alternatives to hand sanitizer and isopropyl alcohol, because I spoke to a manager of a local bulk store and they're removing items like Purell from their system. Local liquor distilleries are offering homemade hand sanitizer. Will homemade vodka hand sanitizer be enough to be safe?
So homemade vodka sanitizer, like making it with the vodka you already have, no. Because the hand sanitizer needs to be at least 60% alcohol. So making it with vodka, you can Google this, making it with vodka will not work. You need high percent liquor. To be able to make that work. If you have, you know, Bacardi 151, that would be what, 75% alcohol about. And so you can, you know, do the math and try and figure out what you, you know, what you might do with that. But in general, no, you want to rely on isopropyl alcohol, denatured alcohol, which you may find at hardware stores or may already have in your stuff, because that can cause all kinds of skin problems. You need to be using isopropyl alcohol, preferably the high percentage stuff.
Okay. Somebody asked, what was the name of the malaria medication?
The malaria medication was chloroquine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's, I think we'd actually gotten that in the chat too. Pavlov takes that as a result of one of her maladies. So, but she did mention, yes, and I think this is important to know, don't do it without a doctor supervision.
Yes, it's used in treatment of, it's used in treatment of lupus, and it's used in treatment of a lot of things. It's been around for a long time, which means that does work. It can be easily, sent to lots of factories for manufacturing and for wide distribution. But that's a big if. I even hesitated whether to mention it at all in this talk, because it is still very, very much an if. But I feel like people, need to see that there is a little bit of a ray of hope.
Is the coronavirus something that will from now on pop up every year, like the flu, do you think?
There is no indication yet that this is a seasonal virus. There are more indications that it does not look like this is just going to kind of go away like the flu does when it gets warmer. And if it does, it'll probably come back like the flu did, or like the flu does, until there is a vaccine in place and so on. But it's worse than that. This is not just a seasonal thing.
Could you tell us the differences between the two strains of COVID-19?
That I don't know enough about those to comment on that.
Right. I've only seen a little bit going around on that, and none of the things that I've read are really detailing the differences, but I also haven't been going down that rabbit hole. So there is that. Someone said, I've read a couple of things about younger healthcare workers ending up with more severe cases similar to the elderly. Do you know anything about that? Is it accurate? Does the amount of exposure seem to matter?
I have not read anything about that. I think, there's a lot that is yet to be seen. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a lot of healthcare workers in the early days of the virus that were exposed in ways where they, in areas where they didn't have proper precautions in place. I think there's so much that is not yet really known and understood about this virus that we need to just all take precautions. And that's why things are shutting down all over the country, because we're trying to get ahead of this as much as we can. We've realized that the first few weeks of it, we messed up. Trump messed up. The administration messed up. New York messed up. And they did not get ahead of this. And they're facing widespread. New York City is facing shutting down the entire city. And that is likely going to happen in a lot of places as this spreads. But it's possible. It is my hope that by really the rest of us really trying to get ahead of this and shutting things down before there's community spread in a lot of areas will prevent community spread, will slow down community spread, and will keep the curve flat enough that we can keep this under control.
So somebody had asked, is there any seriousness to UV lights killing the coronavirus?
I've been interested in that myself. Frankly, I have not had time to look into that. There has been some stuff that I've seen that has suggested that it doesn't do light. So even leaving things on a windowsill or out on your deck or something like that can potentially, kill the virus more quickly than if it is indoors or if it's just, if it's not in the sun. Those sorts of things said, leave it outside for 24 hours. And I've personally been planning on looking into whether certain strengths of UV light might be enough to kill this as it goes by. For example, I know I have in my house, because I live kind of out in the middle of nowhere with a well, I have a whole house UV filtration system. And there is a UV filter as part of that filtration system that kills all of the bacteria and virus and so on in the water as it flows by the light. So there must be UV lights that are strong enough to kill a lot of things pretty quickly. Whether those are commercially available to consumers, and whether they will kill this virus in particular, and whether they would be safe to use to just, you know, pass it over your package that you just received or your hands or whatever, or whether they're safe to be around or not. I don't know enough about any of that to really comment on, but it is certainly an interesting thing that I am interested in looking into further.
You know, I have a comment on that because I was actually reading about the Spanish flu, and people were saying that, well, when they started treating people back then by putting them outside, they started getting better because of the sunshine. Whereas from what I was reading, it wasn't necessarily because of the sunshine. It was because people were spaced further apart while they were sick. So they weren't just breathing in each other's air all of the time. Plus, as it started to warm up, the air got more humid. And so the viruses didn't float as far, kind of like pollen does right now. You know, when it gets humid, it drops to the ground more quickly. And so it doesn't, you know, bother people as much. I thought that was a really interesting sort of alternative perspective to, is it the sunshine type of thing? So somebody had asked, do you work for the CDC to get this information directly, or what are your sources of information?
So for obvious reasons, you know, being a kinkster, being a professional, I prefer not to talk about where I work and who I work for. But I will say that I have worked with colleagues at the CDC for many years. I do not work for CDC. But my work has had me in contact with people at CDC on a daily or weekly basis for a very long time.
Awesome. So somebody said, can't you use, and this is related to, you know, hand sanitizer and so on and so forth. Can't you use, and there's actually going to be three that I'm going to go through so you can answer them as a bundle. Can't you use hydrogen peroxide as an alternative? One. Two, my ex-wife and nurse made homemade antiseptic hand sanitizer using 2/3 hydrogen peroxide mixed with aloe vera. What do you think? Is that a grandma's tale? And then three, is there anything less abrasive that we can use to wash hands or sanitize surfaces? My hands are already rubbed raw.
Okay, so peroxide, as I understand it, can be an effective cleaner. In fact, as we were ordering our pandemic supplies, we ordered an extra gallon of our usual hydrogen peroxide-based cleanser that we have been using for a long time. And that is something that we will be using to sanitize surfaces. I don't know about using it in hand sanitizer. It seems to me like hydrogen peroxide might be nicer to the hands than alcohol. However, I don't know when mixed with aloe vera gel how that works. I would suggest Googling it and seeing if you can find a good source about whether that is useful or not. What was that third question, Nookie? The one about, is there anything else that we less abrasive? So
yes,
I would recommend using soap that is not so abrasive. I have pump hand soaps at all of my sinks. I don't particularly recommend using bar soap in this kind of situation, because then you could be, you know, just you put the bar soap on your dirty hands and then you leave the virus on the soap and nobody needs that. Having a pump that you can use, you know, pump with like your forearm or something like that is great. And you know, do all that rubbing, and the soaps that I use don't dry out my hands. I have pretty dry skin. But as far as all the stuff that you're using to sanitize with, you know, that stuff may be a little harsher. One of the reasons that people recommend using soap instead of using hand sanitizer, is to save the hand sanitizer for when it's really needed, but B, hand sanitizer, anything that is primarily alcohol-based, or really just about anything that is meant to kill all the stuff on your hands, is probably not going to be super kind to your hands. However, soaps, liquid soaps, tend to be made to be a little more hand-friendly. Also, I recommend getting real friendly with your favorite hand creams. You know, after you wash your hands, put on some moisturizer, There's lots of really great hand creams out there that are specifically for hands, that are specifically for dry and cracked hands. If you look on like Amazon and CVS and Walgreens and all those websites, you can find, look for like dry, cracked skin relief type products. And hopefully those two together and use of gloves if you have them when using harsh cleaners will help.
I'm going to throw in Pavlov's follow-up to this, and then I've got at least one more. Does lotion disrupt hand hygiene in any way? Should I wash longer if I'm having to use a lot of lotion to keep my skin from bleeding as much?
Say that one again.
Does lotion disrupt hand hygiene in any way? Should I wash longer if I'm having to use a lot of lotion?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't see why it would. It's possible. I mean, I've never seen any data to that effect, so I'm a little reluctant to say like, oh no, that's not anything you need to worry about. However, I'm just thinking logically, if you wash your hands are clean, you put on moisturizer, it gets rubbed in, it gets absorbed into your skin. The next time you wash your hands, it shouldn't have any effect on that. I would, you know, you might want to avoid like some, I said, you know, there are some moisturizers that are for dry, cracked skin relief. I have some of those that are really just good moisturizers and nice and thick and rub into your hands well. And I have others that are almost like a Vaseline type of texture. And they're really intended to kind of sit into those cracks and sit on the surface of the skin rather than get absorbed in right away. Those could potentially, you know, create a barrier on your hands that it's harder for the soap. But in general, I would think washing your hands and applying a moisturizer, and then you wash your hands again an hour later or 2 hours later or 5 hours later, whatever it is, depending on if you're, you know, if you're at home and there's nothing new coming into your house, you don't need to wash your hands 10 times a day because you haven't been exposed to anything new.
Right.
So
right.
Hopefully.
So as an aside, for those of you who are dealing with dry hands, one of the things that I found is, and of course, as soon as I'm saying it, it just goes right from the tip of my tongue. Shea butter. If you use shea butter, it gets real, at least for me, I have really dry skin. It gets really deep into your skin. And for me, it seems to actually protect through the next couple of washings by, you know, boosting my skin. So, but it's not a lotion. It's definitely something you really have to, you know, warm up with your hands in order to, yes, you can buy that stuff pure by the pound. Absolutely. And if you don't like it pure, you can buy it pure by the pound and then mix it with like a one part coconut oil and five part shea butter and whip it up, and it makes it a little bit more spreadable. So just FYI, udder butter, udder cream, stuff like that. Absolutely. So somebody had asked, is there anywhere we can get an idea if someone we interacted with has tested positive? My job has me interacting with a lot of people in their homes and workplaces. Is there a way that I can get an idea if I should get tested?
Unfortunately, not really. I mean, to some extent, in some areas, they are doing contact tracing where if they have a case, they're trying to do epidemiological study, you know, following of that, where it's like, okay, who have you been, you know, who have you been around in the last few days? Who have you had extended contact with, et cetera? And then they contact those people and tell them to self-isolate and so on. However, there are limits to that. They're defining, and I frankly, I'm not entirely comfortable with this. They're defining exposure for contact tracing purposes as being exposed to somebody at closer than 6 feet for more than 10 minutes, which means if you were only around someone for 5 minutes, they might not consider you worth contacting. And really, it only takes one cough or sneeze or other, you know, droplet exposing situation to have gotten you sick. Mm-hmm. And so, also, I think it won't be long before the system's ability to keep up with all that contact tracing and finding out where people got it and who they've been in contact with and so on, that is going to become overwhelmed. There's only so much of that they can do before it becomes, okay, everyone, you just need to be careful and assume that everyone that you come in contact may have been exposed. Because at this point, you know, we're just about like there. I also saw a question from Just Ren about over the long term, does alcohol-based hand sanitizer promote viral resistance? I have never seen anything to suggest that. There is, you know, of course, there is the notion that antibiotics can cause bacteria to become antibiotic resistant. This is not the same thing. A virus is different. We're just killing the virus and on surfaces. And so I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary, but I have no reason to believe that use of alcohol-based hand sanitizers could lead to viral resistance.
Somebody has said, being that there's a national shortage on sanitizer supplies, can you address kink private parties that insist on moving forward with gatherings? How contagious could an asymptomatic person spread to attendees and spread to their families, coworkers, community, etc.? Being that this is a global pandemic, could they face legal actions if someone gets sick or dies?
Could they face legal action? Who knows? This is a brand new situation. I have read that in some places in Europe, they are, you know, for example, you know, arresting people if they violate their quarantines, things like that. But the rate of asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic spread is as yet unknown. There, I've seen some experts who argue that there must be asymptomatic spread, or it wouldn't have spread this fast, this quickly, this far. However, I've also seen experts that say if there was if asymptomatic spread was a strongly contributing factor here, it would have spread much faster, much more quickly than it already has. I think there's got to be some level of pre-symptomatic spread. You know, not everyone who coughs is sick. You know, I've had a cough and sinus issues for months now because allergies. And in fact, like the week before pandemic hit, I literally went to my doctor to make sure I didn't have the flu because so many people I knew had the flu. And it was really like, no, your allergies are just being extra. And here, have some more allergy medicine. And so, you know, not everyone who coughs is sick, but you know, for the months to come, we don't know what's going to come.
Yeah. What about best practices when we have a family member, partner, or housemate that we're quarantined with? How do we successfully isolate them and avoid getting the virus? And then I would add to that and avoid, you know, then spreading it as we're trying to help them get through everything.
So in that situation, as much as possible, you want that person quarantined to their room, to, you know, their room in a bathroom, and use a separate bathroom. You want to be sanitizing as much as possible. You want to minimize your interaction as much as possible. You know, if you have to go into their room, you know, if it's not just like you could, if it's something where like they can self-care enough so that you can leave a tray of food for them outside the door and they can come pick it up and then leave it for you when they're done. And then you have gloves on and you take and wash that, or, you know, even without gloves, you just take it and you wash everything and you wash your hands and so on. That is probably going to help a lot as far as not getting you sick. If you do need to, like they're in bed and they need your help or what have you, then it is recommended at that point that you wear a mask and that you wear gloves and all that kind of thing. If those things aren't available and you have to take care of someone who is sick, then you want to minimize your, you know, face-to-face interactions with them as much as possible. Like, you know, even if it gets to the point where it's like, okay, when I come in the room, put your face behind the sheets, you know, so if you do have to cough or sneeze, it's going to be under there. And you know, you do what you need to do quickly, you get out of the room, and then you do what you can to wash yourself down. And that's the best way you can help avoid get it if there's someone in your home who has it.
Okay. So somebody asked,
you can self-quarantine as well until your person is over it.
Yeah. So somebody had asked, so no hair salon, no nail salon, et cetera.
Yeah, pretty much. I would recommend that you get used to not doing that for a while. I myself actually just last week, I was looking at my hands and going, wow, I really need a manicure. Like really, really. And I'm not willing to go out to a nail salon just to do this. And I figured, you know what? I've been watching people put acrylic overlays on my natural nails for the last 20 plus years. I think it's about time I learned how to do this myself. So sitting in my mailbox right now for an extra day are the supplies that I need to learn to do my own damn nails. And yeah, I mean, like there's some things that you're going to be better off just not doing for the next, however long this lasts. You know, let your order box hair color or do things that you need to do on your own as much as possible. And if you can do those things with someone who's socially distancing, or if you can, you know, if there's ways that you can work around it, find a way to work around it. Prepare for this to be the new normal for the long haul.
Okay, so will hot tea every 10 minutes help kill the virus?
No, I highly doubt that. There's something going around. Like I've seen things going around saying like, drink lots of hot liquids, don't drink ice water, or drink ice water, don't drink hot liquids. Like I don't see how, and like stuff saying like, keep your throat wet, drink a lot, you know, drink every few minutes. Like, yeah, it's a good idea to keep drinking and keep your throat wet and so on and so forth. Don't think that's going to kill the virus or stop it. Like if you have touched your mouth or eyes and ingested or gotten the virus on yourself, drinking a bit of hot or cold water or liquid is not going to stop you from getting sick if you're going to get sick.
Right. Yeah. Otherwise, well, never mind. So somebody asked, do we know how long this has been in the U.S.? I mean, so I know of a few people, myself included, that were sick in December, January. It felt way worse than the cold I was diagnosed with. Only had a very slight fever. It was a really bad cough, but only lasted a few days. Is it possible that a large amount of people have already had it?
It's possible, but I doubt it. This flu season was really bad. And I know a lot of people, like the last few weeks before this all hit, I knew a ton of people that were down with the flu, and many of them tested positive for flu A and flu B or flu B. So they tested for flu. It is possible that it was here before that. It is possible that someone who was traveling from, you know, some business meeting in China brought it back. It is possible that, like, you know, I don't know if Seattle was where it entered the country, you know, the outbreak at the nursing home, like that had to come from somewhere. Like it came in with travelers. At this point, looking back to how far back it went, especially if those people that may have had it are better now, it doesn't matter. There's no point in looking that far back, I think. I think we need to be looking ahead to how our lives are going to change over the next few months and how to adapt to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it true that folks with blood type A are most at risk?
I haven't read anything to that effect. I suppose it's possible, but
I saw a headline with that today, but yeah, I've seen
a couple of headlines saying blood type A more than like blood type O is supposed to be resistant, and I didn't click through to them though, so I don't know.
It was, I mean, that
if you were doing research. Headline.
On its surface, it sounds a little suspect, but you never know. They may have found that, you know, it's entirely possible. If so, I'm kind of screwed. I'm A.
Okay. So we're going to wrap up, question and answer tonight. We are going to post the replay, as quickly as possible tomorrow. Ryan will be giving you the link where we're going to be posting that here in the chat. It'll be datingkinky.com/COVID/19/replay. So simple and easy.
I didn't have that one.
Yes, you do. You have it in your text.
Oh, sorry.
So he'll be posting that here in the chat. It will also be linked to the goodies page for people who are Dating Kinky Plus members. What was I going to say? Oh, and we're also going to be posting tomorrow when we get the replay. We'll post it up in the Dating Kinky group on FetLife. So you'll be able to ask additional questions there. Bob Was that Bob? Yes, Bob. I've not watched any of the replays yet. Do they also replay the chat? So, Bob, we've just recently, with the last, I don't know, 9 or 10 webinars started including the download for the full chat. It does include the chat sort of running through during the webinar, but we're also including the download for the full chat. So you can, you know, connect with people and replay and reread and so on and so forth. So there is that. For those of you who don't know, Dating Kinky, we do these memberships. We do these webinars for free. Because we believe in connecting you to people and to the education that you need and want. And so next week on Monday, we've got Distinctions of Deviation coming up. That's people of color in kink and their allies. And that will be Monday evening at 8 p.m. And on Wednesday, we have Life in Submission for submissives, bottoms, slaves, pets, etc., anybody on the right side of the slash, and the people on the other side of the slash who are there to learn about them. We do center submissives in that particular discussion. So that'll be a good one. Ryan just posted some information there.
That link is to our schedule of upcoming events, and that will always be refreshed. So
no, that's you posted International Kinky Women's Day. Oh, so you need to
post. Oh yeah, I posted. I'm sorry, I posted the wrong schedule. Yep. Sorry about that. Disregard that link.
Ryan is going to post the live.datingkinky.com schedule link.
This is the good schedule.
Which will be our upcoming events. Also, do keep an eye, speaking of upcoming events, do keep an eye on this one I'm posting here, which is notcheating.com. In June, we're doing a free 2-day event for non-monogamy, ethical and consensual non-monogamy, called It's Not Cheating, It's Ethical, Consensual Non-Monogamy. And so it's going to be 2 days of poly, open, swinging, cuckolding, all the non-monogamy that we can fit into 2 days is going to be in there. And then for those of you who aren't aware, Dating Kinky offers most of our replays. This one is going to be free to anyone and everyone. Most of our replays, that is, I think 17 or 18 so far, go into our Plus membership. Our Plus members get a book every month, a new class every month, although sometimes it ends up being more than that, plus replays to all of our webinars. For a whopping $5 a month right now, normally $20 a month, but I'm kind of sneaking around. My CFO doesn't quite know that he gave me permission to give as many of these away as cheaply as possible until he catches me. Anyway, so Ryan will post the coupon for that. It's $5 per month in perpetuity. So if you join now, it'll always be $5 a month. That means every month, instead of $10 for a book, you'll only pay $5 for a book plus the online classes. Oh, by the way, for those of you who are members, the Alpha Submissive class, I've started posting the lessons for that. So that is in the goodies page right now. If you think you might identify as an Alpha Submissive and you're looking to catch up with that class, absolutely, that one has gotten started. So check that out. So plus membership. And thank you for joining us tonight. Bad Kitty, you were freaking awesome. It was so wonderful to have you. You were brilliant as always. I mean, I've always said that about you, but I'm going to gush just a little bit more this evening, because you just covered everything, like everything, brilliantly.
Okay. So, Kitty, I've only been in your presence twice, but both times were brilliant. So you're batting thousand.
See, and that's why we keep Ryan around.
Yeah.
That and because he posts links. Ryan, could you make sure and post the Kink Things link again?
Yep.
And everybody who really loved Bad Kitty, please do consider going to Kink Things and supporting her and her sweetie pie. That would be super duper awesome. And if you love these events and you think that they're worth, you know, $5 a month to help support me, because I'm not yet taking a salary after 3 years, or to make sure that long term, we'd love to be making enough money so that we can actually pay participants. That's important, because Bad Kitty is doing this on her time for you. She took time out of her Wednesday evening to present this for you. So please do, you know, again, go over to Kink Things, bookmark it if you don't have the money right now. He does gorgeous, I mean, drop dead gorgeous work. And it's not what you're going to see everywhere. It's not like black painted wood with black leather. It's like gorgeous, like reclaimed wood with fancy leathers that are just freaking fantastic.
He also does, I was looking at today. I'm sorry. He also does bats for those of you who are maybe missing out on what's going to be baseball season this year. I'm looking at a Yankees fan in the New Jersey area.
Yeah, bats have been popular. They're shaved down bats, and they've become very, very popular. And I will say I'm very proud of him for the sorts of unique designs that he has brought to the world of kink, where I thought, surely there's nothing new out there. But I was so sick of seeing, you know, flogger after flogger that just had that same, you know, barbell style handle with leather wrapped around it. And he's doing these amazing wood designs and uses wood from churches and one room schoolhouses and, you know, all kinds of really fascinating histories to the wood. I mean, he literally carried 100 pounds of lignum vitae wood, the hardest wood in the world, back from Jamaica on his back, because he loves making this kind of stuff for people. So you can find really, really interesting and unusual stuff with him.
Yeah, one of my favorite slappers was a birthday gift a couple of years ago from Reclaimed Wood, and I love it especially for foot play, for like light bastinado, and I mean that receiving it as well as giving it. It's just got the perfect shape to just tap, 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 very, very nicely. So Absolutely. And, you know, thank you all for joining us this evening. It thrills me that there were so many people who were interested in this and engaged in this and, you know, open to learning what we can do to keep everyone safe. That's a really, really wonderful thing. Okay.